This is Upstate's HealthLink on air. Linda Cohen here with you. Headphones have become a staple in everyone's lives, but there seems to be some possible consequences to their use. Hearing loss is currently on the rise among teenagers and young adults, and it's been suggested that this is due to the frequency of use and volume of the headphones. We'll hear with more on this as Dr. Brian Nicholas, Assistant Professor of Otolaryngology and Communication Sciences at Upstate Medical University. Welcome, Dr. Nicholas. Thanks for coming in.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
So hearing loss is increasing in teens and young adults. Can you help us understand that?
It seems to be. There was a study that came out just a few years ago that looked at prevalence of hearing loss among adolescents, so 12 to 19-year-old folks, and that rate between about 1990 and about 2005 went up from about 15% to 20%.
Wow.
So that's a huge jump. And we're looking at reasons for why that may be. The obvious thing that stands out is the degree of noise exposure. In that interim, certainly the advent of personal music devices, MP3 players came onto the scene, and that's been sort of the glaring change in practices among adolescents.
So who's most at risk for this kind of thing? Are we saying mostly largely teens, but there are also adults are doing this as well?
Both, for sure. I mean, we see these practices certainly more more common among adolescents and teenagers, but we're also seeing it in even younger and younger folks. Very often, children under the age of 12 are using personal music devices, insert earbuds, over-the-ear earphones, but then certainly teenagers. Adults are at no less risk for this. We just tend to see those practices a little bit less than we do in the adolescent population.
So tell us a little bit more about the type of hearing loss that takes place. This is a particular type of hearing loss due to noise exposure. Explain what happens.
Yeah, that's right. So basically there are two general forms of hearing loss, a conductive type of hearing loss in which sound doesn't get to the inner ear with quite enough amplitude or volume. And that's generally reversible if somebody's got a hole in their eardrum or fluid behind their eardrum or too much wax.
For mm-hmm.
Exactly.
So something obstructing or
correct.
Limiting the amount of sound getting in.
That's right. And that's a conductive hearing loss. We're talking about the other kind of hearing loss, which is an inner ear type hearing loss. That's called a sensory neural type hearing loss. And most of the time, and certainly in cases of noise-induced hearing loss, it's because the cochlea, the organ of hearing, loses function, and it does so because it loses hair cells, and these hair cells inside the cochlea are really what's responsible for transmitting sound to our auditory nerve. Without those hair cells, we lose the ability to do that and to hear.
So you lose them due to high levels of noise?
You can lose them due to a whole host of things.
Right, but in this circumstance?
In this instance, yes. It's due to high levels of noise or for sustained periods of time. You can also lose hair cells due to the normal aging process. You can lose hair cells due to certain medications or drugs that are toxic to the ear. But this is a classic example of inner ear type hearing loss, which generally is not reversible.
And so kids are doing this and they're wearing these headphones or earbuds or whatever, sometimes even fall asleep with them on. So it's not only the volume, but it's also the length of time
that
kind of exposure is taking place.
That's right. It's a function really of two things. One is the amplitude, the volume of the sound, and the other is the duration. Years ago, OSHA came up with guidelines for occupational noise exposure, and the guidelines were 85 decibels, no more than 85 decibels for 8 hours.
And decibels is the way you measure
the
intensity.
Exactly right. Thank you for clarifying. Even though it's 85 for 8, for every 5 decibels that you increase that amplitude, you reduce the amount of time that's safe to listen to it by half. So if it's safe to listen to 85 for 8, it's only safe to listen to 90 for 4. And if you carry that out, we're talking about 100 decibels for no more than an hour.
Wow.
And we know that personal devices go higher than that. There are limits in certain countries, particularly in Europe. In the United States, a personal device music player can go as high as 108 decibels.
Mm.
And we know that many, many young folks listen to their personal music device all the way up and for much longer than an hour.
Wow.
So you can really appreciate the risk there.
Well,
it helps.
It helps understand then this increasing
Oh, sure.
frequency, increasing number of
right.
injuries going on. So does the size of the headphone make a difference? I mean, you know, one would think, I think it's counterintuitive, one would think that the larger the headphone, the larger the noise impact. But I think it's the reverse, isn't it?
It seems to be, yeah. Insert earphones or earbuds, which, again, sort of came into vogue or really were invented around the time of the initial personal music device players in the early part of the 2000s. And these deliver sound much closer to our eardrum. And so there isn't as much obstruction of sound. There's a direct placement of that sound into the middle ear and then the inner ear. When somebody wears a circumoral headphone, not only is it further away from where we're delivering sound, but also some of them can be noise canceling, in which case there isn't the need to raise sound above the ambient noise floor.
When we say noise canceling, because I've heard that many times too, mm-hmm. they say, they advertise, this is noise canceling headphone. Mm-hmm. What exactly are they doing? And that does really help with this whole problem?
Yeah. So a noise canceling headphone essentially is creating a seal around the auricle, around the ear, by which other sound isn't able to get in. When that happens, then you're able to deliver sound through the device at a much safer volume. There are all sorts of circumoral headphones that don't transmit any sound, but people wear them as hearing protection. If somebody's using a chainsaw or something, you'll often see them wearing something over their ears.
Exactly.
It's not delivering any sound. It's just protecting their ears from that level of noise.
So you have that protective aspect.
And it's delivering sound.
Okay. Yeah. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen here with otolaryngologist Dr. Brian Nicholas. We're talking about headphones and hearing loss. So what are some of the consequences then of this kind of early hearing loss, the potential consequences long term?
Well, one of the trouble things about really getting a grip on how big a problem this is very often 12 to 19-year-olds or even young adults older than that don't frequently get their hearing tested. And often high-frequency hearing loss, which is typically where it starts, can go unnoticed. The problem we fear will be realized in the next 10, 15, 20 years, where that damage to the cochlea really becomes a bigger problem, and the hearing loss becomes a much bigger problem. It accelerates damage to the inner ear. And so the hearing loss maybe that went unnoticed at the age of 20 is now very noticeable at the age of 30 or 35 or 40. With that comes tinnitus or ringing in the ears, which is very often associated. Many young people will admit to having ringing in their ears that's intermittent, particularly after a loud noise exposure. We've all had that experience where we go to a concert or something and your ears are ringing afterwards. What may be happening is something called a temporary threshold shift, meaning your hearing temporarily worsens. Often that comes back, but when you expose your inner ear to a certain level of noise, you can get what's called a permanent threshold shift, and that's the big concern.
So that means a permanent loss.
That's right. That's a permanent loss, and that ringing that prior to this may have been intermittent can be much more constant.
But what further consequences might there be? I mean, clearly we know that obviously severe hearing loss brings with it tremendous consequences. Mm-hmm. But when you're starting at a young age like this and you start experiencing this kind of high-frequency hearing loss, what kind of things, either subtle, are there learning issues that may be associated with that, social, emotional kinds of issues?
It's hard to know. I mean, in young folks, often it's subtle things like turning the TV up louder, or in the presence of background noise, maybe paying a little bit less attention in school, maybe daydreaming. Often in younger folks, hearing loss manifests with behavioral issues. Typically, it's school-aged, middle school, high school-age kids who are using these earbuds, and so the hearing loss really will be manifested in their young adulthood. The concern is that over time, over their lifetime, that will accelerate hearing loss and damage to the cochlea, such that when they're in their middle ages, their hearing loss is much more than a nuisance, and it becomes a big impairment on their quality of life. When we're talking about some older folks, there is evidence that links hearing loss to some cognitive decline, early onset dementia, which is very, very worrisome. So We don't know the extent that this increase in young people, this increase in hearing loss among young people will have moving forward, but the concern is that we're going to see big spikes as this generation matures in hearing loss, in ringing or tinnitus, and potentially even in cognitive decline.
Wow. Pretty scary stuff. So you talked about duration earlier. Mm-hmm. Tell me what you think is the key element here in terms of duration. You were making statements before about how long.
Yeah. Yeah. So again, really, it's a function of two issues, how loud and for how long. You know, very often parents ask me, well, what's a safe volume or what's a safe amount of time? And so just in terms of putting it in practical sense, I'll often counsel patients or their parents to not have their personal music player any more than 60 or 70%. And to do so for only an hour, just giving your ear a rest after an hour for 30 minutes, for 60 minutes is really, really important because it allows our ear to sort of recalibrate, to heal after this trauma of noise for the last 60 minutes. Longer durations, and certainly longer durations at higher volumes, are when we get into trouble.
You know, another problem that it seems, that strikes me is that a lot of people wear these kinds of headphones or earbuds to block out mm-hmm. what is kind of ambient noise in the environment.
Yeah.
You know, especially in big cities where you have so much noise, street noise.
Yep.
Or if you work near somewhere that there's construction noise or something of that nature. And tell us a little bit more about how that impacts what then happens with the headsets.
Yeah, I mean, that's particularly worrisome because we're trying to drown out what is ambient sound. So if there's a noise floor or ambient sound that is 50, 60, 80 decibels, then overcoming that and delivering a sound to your inner ear potentially puts us at very, very high volumes. I'll give you an example. For, you know, before I really understood all this, I made a habit of mowing the lawn with earphones on, and these were insert earphones. And so it's not drowning any sound out, but the lawnmower itself is easily 80, 85 decibels. So in order to overcome that and for me to still hear the music, 100, 105 decibels, and the lawn's taken me an hour, hour and a half. So that was a dangerous level of exposure. At this point, just if you want to wear insert earphones, to wear circumoral earphones.
You mean the ones that really cover the
protective
ear.
Ones, yes, yep. Over the top. So that cancels the sound out, and then you're able to listen to your personal music device
that's an interesting,
at 50, 60%.
That's an interesting solution.
Right.
Yeah, that's a really good idea. So the message, I guess, here, and we have a little bit of time left, basically is to limit the amount of time and limit the volume and be aware that all this is going on and the potential for severe damage is there.
Absolutely, yep. So for parents to be aware of this. They shouldn't be able to hear the volume over their own children's ears. To limit both volume and duration are really the key points.
Very, very helpful information. Let's hope we get this message out because we have a whole generation of kids who are possibly going to be sustaining significant damage to their ears.
Indeed.
Thank you. My guest has been Dr. Brian Nicholas. He's Assistant Professor of Otolaryngology and Communication Sciences at Upstate Medical University. Once again, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
I'm Linda Cohen. You're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air.